I would like to welcome everybody to the least important award show of 2020.
Oh, the Country Music Awards?
No.
The MTV Video Music Awards?
No.
The Golden Globes?
No.
Oh, it's ours, isn't it?
It was actually the Golden Globes.
Got it.
Time to play the game.
All right, so yes, it is
we
time.
We saved the worst cold open of the year till the last one, which is awesome. I love that.
Perfect. It's like we planned it.
Go out with a bang.
The worst year ends with the worst cold open. So yeah, we do have our awards coming up in a little bit here, but we'd be remiss if not to talk about probably the big news in wrestling right now is the passing of Brody Lee. That was announced the day after Christmas, and I think big shocking news to the wrestling community and to wrestling fans all over the world. And we had a big tribute show put on by AEW, a lot of tributes done by WWE wrestlers on Raw this week. I just want to say that, like, before AEW, before even Luke Harper, I was a fan of Brody Lee from his independent days and his time spent in Chikara and in Ring of Honor. And I've always been a fan of him and appreciated his work, thought that he was an untapped talent and a talent that was unlike any other in the industry. And I think that this is a dude who touched a lot of people's lives, as we've seen through some of these Talking Heads segments on the AEW show tonight. He's going to be a person who's definitely missed in this world, not just in the industry.
Well, it's a really interesting thing because we lose wrestlers all the time, and it seems like a normal thing for the WWE. It feels like once a month at least there's some kind of tribute at the start of the show, whether it's a brief graphic or it's a big-time tribute for someone like Mean Gene Okerlund or someone like that. Because, you know, the industry is always moving forward. There are legends that have been working in the business for years who are getting older and passing away, but we don't see this very often with someone Brody Lee's age, someone active, working in the business actively currently. So it is a big deal, and it shakes the industry a little bit more when that happens. I have to take a step back, and, you know, I think it was maybe 2-3 weeks ago where I was complaining that where's Brody Lee? They're not even talking about where he is, because he's the leader of the Dark Order, which has taken this weird turn from a heel faction to some kind of tweener, babyface, goofy group most segments, but then also trying to be serious in other segments, and kind of ripping on AEW for not at least giving us an angle. Is he injured? Is he having knee surgery? Can you give me an update? Can you tell me where the leader of the Dark Order is? Because in storyline, it's pretty shitty that they haven't done that. Well, my bad, guys. I can admit when I'm wrong. If someone is legitimately sick and there hasn't been, I don't know if you've seen any real update on what happened. I heard it was a lung issue, non-COVID, but you know, we don't know how long he's been fighting an illness or what's been going on. So I'll admit, if someone's fighting a real life disease, is having serious health issues that have led to their demise, that necessarily shouldn't be a thing on AEW TV or any television show. So I pay my respects in that way. I understand why they haven't done that, and I'll take the hit for complaining about that weeks ago. So that was one thing that I was thinking about.
Yeah, you're at least. What you said there, lung-related issues, non-related to COVID, is what I saw and what I'll accept. If that's what his wife says, then I will accept that, because there's probably no one who knows him better than his own family. And if that's what they feel comfortable putting out there, they are in every right to do as such.
Sure.
We're not going to discuss the show in great detail because this was not a show that I would consider like canon, if you will. This was a tribute show. This was a show where storylines were mostly put on the back burner. We did see a little bit of storyline related stuff through the show, but for the most part, it was meant to be exhibition. It was meant to get some people out there who were close to Brody and like most affected by him in their lives. And we saw heels teaming with baby faces and people teaming with the Dark Order all throughout the night, and the Dark Order having a clean sweep of wins throughout the night, just as a means of celebration for the group that he was the leader of. And we got wonderful talking segments from people, the John Moxley one, the Bryce Remsburg, the Eddie Kingston ones are probably the ones that stuck out the most to me, because they are people who I know have known Brody for a very, very long time from hanging out in Philadelphia at the arena there, working together. They've gone back a long time with one another. And, you know, for just entertaining wrestling standpoint and celebrating a good dude, a good worker's life, I accepted it for what it was. A lot of it make sense when you want to put it in line with the rest of Dynamite and AEW? No, but, you know, can take it for what it was.
Yeah, I don't want to be in the position to for AEW to take this show out for one of its own and highlight their career and do what they did. I want to applaud them for that. In a way, because you know they were stressing this whole thing, and Shivani and Jim Ross talking about their whole family and all this. That's meaningful and it's important, and I think that it is it's an admirable thing. I also have to be realistic on the other side and say, is that the best thing for your television product? And doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't want to be the asshole that says, you know, don't celebrate the death of somebody in your company on your TV show. I just wonder, at the risk of being an asshole, I wonder if it's the best thing to do on your Dynamite, on your weekly show. I wonder if it wouldn't be best. I mean, this is a company that is more inside baseball than any company that's ever existed, right? They assume that we watch their internet show. They assume that we watch Being the Elite and the terrible Young Bucks segments that they do, or whatever their YouTube channel is. They assume all that. This content that they put out there, I think a lot of it could have been done online, and a lot of us would have found it because we want to see it. And Chadwick Boseman, Black Panther, the actor who played Black Panther, died, and I don't expect necessarily the next Black Panther movie to do a long, you know, a cutaway every 25 minutes to someone talking about Chadwick Boseman, right? I look at a television product like AEW, like a 30-minute sitcom, like a, you know, a drama on A&E, or I'm sorry, A&E, the on
AMC,
whatever, on AMC, thank you. I look at those and say, well, those are kind of all in the same vein, and I kind of expect some internal consistency in the logic of what they're doing. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying that I don't know if there was better ways to do it that do serve the storyline, that do serve some continuity and still play to some of those themes. Most of this show was beautiful in a lot of ways to watch. The emotion was real. I would never take away the instances of the family getting involved and what they did for them. I think it's beautiful. I just don't know if that would have been better served to do that in front of that crowd and put that up on YouTube instead of doing it on the show when you've got a person like Cody who was supposed to hate this person. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a dick. I'm comfortable with that, by the way. If I'm just wrong in that, and it's and this was the greatest thing of all time, I'll own it. I just found some of it to be a little, I don't know, a little weird.
See, I think despite that, we have on many occasions compared wrestling shows to other scripted shows like Breaking Bad. I feel like Breaking Bad's the one that we bring up most of the time. You're always just, like, Walter White, blah, 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 Jesse.
By the way, I just do that because it's one of those great touchstone shows that everyone knows about, but you could say The Good Place, or you could say Schitt's Creek, or you could say, you know, whatever other great dramas going on right now.
But, and while I agree that we do that a lot, I do think that professional wrestling is in this somewhat weird in between of that to where like a solely scripted television show, you're going to see, yes, the show must go on, and you might have things like in between commercial, like at commercial breaks, with little talking segments if an actor were to pass away, they'll fill in some of the time there, but the show itself remains the same. While also in a true sporting league, you're going to see a lot of on-field tributes to a fallen player and things like that. So when you combine the fact that wrestling is supposed to be this hybrid of sorts of true sport and television drama, to find some sort of in-between that kind of works in that way, of pulling the curtain back and being real and the show must go on, I think that something like this works. And like you said, it is very rare nowadays in wrestling for us to have this happen to someone who is an active participant. Like Eddie and Benoit were probably some of the most memorable ones, at least that I can remember in our generation. I mean, one was obviously a terrible tragedy that unfolded after a tribute show was put together. And that wasn't even a show must go on. But the Eddie one was. Like, they combined the show going on with tribute matches. And like they did some stuff that was outside of the storylines for that show after Eddie's passing. And I absolutely give them a pass for this. I thought that it was a well put together show, and I think that they're well within their rights to do this. And I don't think that it hinders storylines, because most of us know that this is a scripted thing. We can put this behind us for a week, and then next week they'll have, what is it called now, New Year's Gold or whatever, Gold Rush whatever. They're pushing all of that back a week to start next week.
You're not wrong. Let me just say that. I am probably more nitpicky than you are in a lot of ways. And I'm just asking, and honestly, I'm not saying this in kind of like the triggery troll way. I'm just asking the question, could this have been done a little bit different to serve the company and what's going on and still done what they did with the people talking about Brody Lee? So no, I don't have a problem with what happened. I've had an issue with the Dark Order over the last month. I don't understand how John Silver is a babyface and the entire other part of the factions are heels. You know, if you want to take it in the context of a match, when Jim Ross literally says John Silver's a white meat babyface, yeah, in the middle of a match, I just don't know what to do with that. They come out of the heel entranceway. They are heels. And I'm not even talking about this week. I'm talking about the last 6 weeks. Somehow he's a babyface and the rest of them are heels. So I'm a little bit jumbled up. I'm a little bit taking what's happened over the last several weeks with what happened this week. And it's just a little bit weird for me. Trying to enjoy this show for what it was. But if you want to take this show, take it out of the continuity, show it for what it was. It was beautiful. And it was a company the size of AEW with the investments that have been made in the talent, taking this time to honor one of their people is impressive.
Yeah.
Putting off an important show that was supposed to have a title match, or I can't remember what was supposed to happen tonight, and doing that, I will give Tony Khan and everyone that's involved in that decision-making kudos for doing that, because that's not an easy decision to make. Right or wrong, good or bad, indifferent, whatever it is, I do have to give them that for taking the time to honor somebody who was important to them, part of their team, part of their family, and honor their family in a way. So I'll stop talking about that now.
It was overall, yeah, a great thing to put out there. I enjoyed it. I was a fan of Brody Lee through practically everything that I got to watch him. Not everything always was shiny and great, but he was an immense talent that I felt like got the short end of the stick sometimes, but really enjoyed him. All right, let's move on to maybe some cheerier stuff. There's still going to be some downs during this. It is time for the Miss Spots Awards of 2020, the worst year for the worst awards. It's a trademarked TM at the end of that. All right. So every year we give out our awards to our best and worst in certain categories. We make up new ones. We bring back familiar ones. So with that all in mind, let's kick off. That was a great intro, right?
Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you having a seizure?
No. is our Skype connection all messed up?
No, you're doing great. I was just wanting to make sure, cuz you felt like you were going to throw to me, and I think it's all on you for the first one.
No, I'm throwing to myself.
Okay. And take it away, Mike.
Thanks, Mike and Kevin. We're going to kick things off here with our first award, Feud of the Year. And oddly enough, all three of our nominees come from AEW.
Well, one thing, Mike, we should mention, and I'm sorry, I know you just went through a painful thing to get to here.
It was very painful.
We stopped watching. Away. We really stopped watching WWE over 6 months ago. Not WWE, yeah. Not NXT, but the Raw and SmackDown. our awards represent the TV that we're watching. So if you are going to nitpick the fact that we didn't select or didn't put Raw and SmackDown stars on this, sorry, we don't watch it because it sucks. So we try to watch the better shows, which still suck most of the time, quite honestly. But almost everything we have here of our nominees, with a few exceptions, are NXT and AEW related, because that's what we've been watching for the majority of the year. And the stuff that happened early in the year we were watching for WWE, Raw, and SmackDown was really awful. So, and it was a long time ago, so we've forgotten all of that. So you're going to see a lot of AEW and NXT stuff, so that's the deal.
Kevin just opened up some old wounds. Old, deep wounds. They haven't healed right. Now I'm remembering them, and we're going to remember some more of them in a little bit.
Let's do it, Mike.
So our feud of the year nominees include John Moxley and MJF. MJF and Cody. And John Moxley and Chris Jericho. For the most part, these were also very early on in the year. Moxley,
back when
Jericho.
Back when AEW was good.
Cody. Yes. Very early on, there were still regular-sized crowds. They were still traveling around to different venues for this. Moxley, MJF, I think, was like middle of the year, if I remember right.
That was. That was during the COVID era, and that was during the stupid campaign stuff, but MJF was still good.
Yeah. And the biggest things that stood out from these feuds was a lot of times great build-up to them, whether that be promos, vignettes, face-to-face interactions that maybe didn't always have brawls, especially with, I'll just go out and say it, our winner, MJF and Cody, they didn't touch each other because it was a stipulation that for Cody to get the match, he couldn't lay his hands on MJF. He had to take a lashing from MJF. He had to fight Wardlow in a steel cage in order to get his hands on MJF. And the mic work between probably two of the top five, top three microphone people in AEW was great work.
I mean, this was a great feud. It started the year before, obviously, with MJF turning on Cody. And we had to be reminded, looking back through this, that the end of this feud happened in 2020, because it feels like a lifetime ago. But it did. You know, it was February when Cody fought Wardlow in the steel cage, right before all this stuff went down. And this really was a great feud. It was great mic work. It was an old school feud. It had a great stipulation. When I look at these feuds, and it's particularly Moxley and Jericho and MJF and Cody, this happened pre-COVID, and these were great because they were old school wrestling. I mean, you had Jericho blinding Moxley with a spike. You had him trying to give him a car to join the inner circle. These were very classic wrestling storylines that just worked in 2020. And the real shame of it is that I think that AEW lost almost all of that as the year went on, because those classic storylines kind of went away. And that great build and storyline and storytelling has kind of fallen by the wayside. And I think you see it by our picks for Feud of the Year. But MJF and Cody was great. I'd love to see him pick that back up, honestly. And by the way, I'd love to see Moxley and Jericho again, if Jericho can be serious for 5 seconds.
Yeah, maybe he needs to take a note from Lance Storm, who likes to be serious for a minute,
for at least a moment.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we moving on to the next one, Mike?
Yes. Go ahead, Kevin.
And usually, just for context, usually we have invited MJF and Cody both to come in and accept this award, and for some reason they never come and we accept it for them, so let's just get that pretense out of the way. We've done that. The next award is the Miss Spots Participation Award. So this is an interesting one because you can give it a participation award to somebody who has really done nothing of note and you just want to kind of give them something to placate them. You can also give a participation award to somebody that is just kind of always on the outside looking in, never really gets a chance to shine, never really gets a chance to show what they can do. And our nominees this year kind of run that gamut. In representing NXT is Jake Atlas and Robert Stone, both of which have been featured at least for a while constantly on TV. We don't know why, but they have. And representing AEW is Joey Janela and Sean Spears. One of which, Joey Janela, why has he been featured on TV? We're not sure. Sean Spears featured constantly in having tons of different angles that never go anywhere. So those are our four nominees. And the winner of the Miss Spots Participation Award this year is Sean Spears. So we went with more of the kind of feel bad for you, Sean. You had a news segment that lasted 1 week. Tully Blanchard gave you a glove and then abandoned you for FTR. You got in a feud with Scorpio Sky that just kind of didn't go anywhere. You're the chairman.
It just ended.
Did it just end? I didn't know it did.
We got the blow off to it. Without really having known that there was a whole lot going on between them.
Yeah, there are a few people on that roster. I mean, Sean Spears has a great look, obviously has charisma and personality, and it seems like they've tried 14 different things for him and none of them have worked. And I'm sure some of it is him, but I feel like there could be other things because there are people being featured more often and more consistently with actually continuity in their stories that have not got, who have gotten more screen time than Sean Spears. And because of that, we're giving him our participation award for 2020.
I feel like he has gone from being the perfect 10 to Mr. Non-Sequitur.
Non-Sequitur? I'll help you out.
Mr. Non Sequitur. It feels like every time I see him on Dynamite, he's doing something different.
Yes.
To where there is no continuity with his character. Like, oh, he has a glove now. Oh, he has a talking segment. Oh, he is cosplaying as a giraffe. Like, that one hasn't happened yet. But
you have inside knowledge and you know it's going to happen. So good for you.
Yes. Yeah. I feel bad for this guy. And like all those things that Kevin said, he has a great look. He has charisma. He is a very good worker. It's a shame that we thought that coming to AEW was a chance for him to really be utilized in a right way, and it just doesn't seem like that has happened. So it does suck to see when you can see that there is that talent there. So yeah.
All right, Sean, you are a part of the rarefied air of the Miss Spots Participation Award. I think, Mike, you have the next award ready to go.
Yes. And with that, we bring to you the Shane McMahon Babyface Award for babyfaces that don't babyface so good. A award that we brought up, I don't know, was it 1-2 years ago? And
at least 2 years ago.
And with
can I just say that last year's winner was Seth Rollins, and the year before was Shane McMahon, which is strange enough.
That was the inaugural one, I take it.
The inaugural one. So I just want to give some context. Now, drum roll, please. By the way, there are no nominees for this. We just pick a winner. And Mike, please go ahead.
Yes. And the winner is the Young Bucks. a team who I never know what they're supposed to be.
They super kick announcers. They super kick random ringside people, and we're supposed to cheer them. They're heels. Are they baby faces? They're aligned with Kenny Omega, who's taking the title to a different company, but they're still friends and they're still good. What? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But they're angry at heel tag teams. It doesn't make sense. So for that, Young Bucks, congratulations. You don't babyface so good.
No, they don't. And in that spirit, we have created a new award this year. And if you have any understanding of what's just happened and what we're leading into, you might be able to predict it. This will now be called the first annual Chris Jericho Heel Award for heels that don't heel so good. And I don't want to, you know, just get way too far ahead of myself, but if we can go back to the first Shane McMahon Award, you might be able to predict this one before I say it. But the first annual Chris Jericho Heel Award for heels that don't heel so good goes to Chris Jericho.
I'm shocked and in awe. I am but mostly shocked.
And Chris Jericho deserves this with every fiber of his being for inciting crowds to sing along to his music as he goes to the ring as a dastardly heel, of basically being a comedy character 98.99% of the time, for putting over babyfaces on commentary, even though he's supposed to be a heel, for in no way trying to get heat in any way, shape, or form, at least since about March. Chris Jericho started this year as the best heel in the company, leading a serious heel faction, and at some point decided he just wanted to be a comedy character and be beloved. If there is one thing I've realized about AEW, is they just want everyone on their roster to be loved. And Chris Jericho is the perfect example. So Chris Jericho, congratulations. I hope this will be a long line of Chris Jericho heel awards for heels that don't heel so good. And congratulations.
I don't know why I get this feeling, but I get this feeling that Chris Jericho is going to clean up at these awards.
At least his faction will. We'll see.
Next up, we have the breakthrough performer of the year. And the nominees are Keith Lee, Kyle O'Reilly, Darby Allin, and Damian Priest. All four of these folks had pretty damn good years. Keith Lee ascended into the main event of NXT, defeated the longest reigning NXT champion in history, Adam Cole, to capture that title, moved up to the main roster, defeated Randy Orton in a feud. Now he's not on TV anymore. Kyle O'Reilly became just a guy in the Undisputed Era, the tag team, one of the tag team specialists of that faction, to putting on a banger of a match with Finn Balor that we'll talk about a little bit later, and now staying in the singles competition and having another title match with Finn coming up next week on NXT television. Darby Allin, a guy who I thought so highly of last year that in our predictions, I said that he could become the AEW champion in a very Kofi Kingston, Daniel Bryan-like way. I was not right about that. I will say right here, I was wrong. But he is the TNT champion right now and has absolutely gotten himself over with the crowd, with AEW management, and has become a bright shining star in the making. And then Damian Priest, like, I feel like just even in the last 4 to 5 months, this dude has just elevated himself, being a part of the U.S. title picture. I think that Kevin has said he just, you look at him and he just kind of screams cool. So he has that charisma, that vibe already about him. And he's a damn good worker and a pretty good talker, with a unique look, a unique voice. And all of these guys had really good years. But for the breakout performer, we're going to go with my boy, Darby Allin. I just think that this guy, like, he, to be fair, he was pretty popular at the end of 2019, but I just think that he has risen so much farther from that and become a like one of the main event guys for that company now.
Well, I mean, he's won a title, which is a big deal, and he won a title from Cody, which is a very, very big deal. Darby has a natural charisma to him. This is why I love Darby Allin so much. I hate Darby Allin so often. I don't find his vignettes all that interesting most of the time. I like the enigmatic stuff, but I don't care that he's hanging out with random skateboarder guy or falling off of things in body bags. I find that very uninteresting. But when he gets into the ring, I'm captivated by him. He's one of the people that should be doing dives. He's one of, if Darby Allin was the only undersized babyface doing daredevil stuff, it would be lightning in a bottle. Unfortunately, most of AEW is undersized babyfaces or heels. They're interchangeable because they don't have those doing daredevil stuff. But Darby does it better than everybody else. When he does a dive to the outside, it looks like he's trying to hurt you. It doesn't look like he's trying to just jump and land gingerly so everyone feels okay. So I'm very happy to see Darby Allin doing as well as he's doing. I think he needs to pack on some pounds a little bit, beef up. He's a small guy, but he still has a very big upside, a natural charisma, a watchability that so few people in AEW actually have. So I'm happy that Darby Allin got the breakthrough star of the year.
All right. Kevin, take us on to the next one.
Well, the next one goes on the other side of the coin, so to speak, and the most disappointing professional wrestler of the year, and we're going to talk about three nominees in this category, one being Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega was supposed to be the ace of his company, spent the first half of the year in a tag team with Adam Page that had some good parts, but had a very weird ending and never really came about to anything of material. Had a decent part of the end of the year with a title run and started to be actually interesting again. But in general, Kenny Omega has never really done what they thought Kenny Omega should do in AEW. The middle part of the year was almost unwatchable. Bad promos, bad storylines, confusing stuff. So Kenny Omega belongs on this list. Johnny Gargano's heel run has not been stellar. It's mostly comedy and mostly unwatchable. So Johnny Gargano belongs on this list. And then most disappointing, we have the Inner Circle as a whole. And if you've heard what we said earlier about Chris Jericho and the fact that his entire faction turned into a comedy faction sometime around COVID, you'll understand exactly why they belong on this list. And after much deliberating, Mike and I decided to give the most disappointing to the Inner Circle. And that's really important because at the beginning of this year, they were a formidable team that was serious, that wanted to blind Jon Moxley, that wanted to take out the rest. Yeah, that wanted to take out the rest of the roster. And then they became the Bubbly Bunch. And then they started feuding with Orange Cassidy. And then they started doing comedy segments every single week. And then they started to slip and fall in orange juice. The Inner Circle, when it was conceived, when Cody Rhodes punched out the glass in the box early on in AEW, was something that was great in wrestling. And it has turned into a joke. It has turned into something unwatchable. I don't want to hear Chris Jericho on commentary. I don't want to see him wrestle. I'm not interested in Jake Hager. And nothing about them works in the context of pro wrestling at this point. And because of that, they are the most disappointing.
Yeah, it's very sad. I believe it was once said, "Oh, how the mighty have fallen," because this was a dangerous heel faction at the beginning of the year. Try to, like we said, murder Jon Moxley, and now they would rather bicker amongst themselves in a comedic fashion, have dinners, go party in Las Vegas, and Jericho just constantly complaining about his jacket, his whatever things that he complains about.
It's just all comedy. None of this ever seems menacing. It never seems like a real threat. They're just a comedy team. Yeah. And early on, the potential and what we actually saw was so much more.
We have a brand new award this year coming at you. It is... No?
No, we had this award last year.
We did.
Do you want me to tell you who won it?
Oh, wait. I do now see it, but I don't see who won it because I don't see a bolding on it.
Well, I think they both won.
Oh, is that what?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So not a brand new award. Second year that we've had the Stay the Fuck Off My Professional Wrestling Show Award. apparently, both Cain Velasquez and Tyson Fury won this last year. If not, then whatever, correct us. This year, this honor goes to Jade Cargill, who is just, why are you there? Do you need to be there? Oh, you're there sometimes, but you're not there all the times. You're Shaq, Cody, Brandy. What?
Did she have anything to do with Shaq?
Wasn't she the one who first said Shaq's name?
Yes, but he didn't really. When Shaquille O'Neal showed up, he actually never said anything. He said, "Oh yeah, I think she's great," but showed no involvement with her whatsoever. They totally swerved away from that immediately. She looked like a deer in headlights. She had no idea how to speak on a microphone. And I don't ever want to see her at a pro wrestling show ever again. Because why in the hell would I ever want to see her again when you put her on the TV show before she was ready to do anything? She's tall. She's muscular. But the idea to put a tall, muscular woman on TV because she looks like a professional wrestler, next time, let's make sure they're actually a professional wrestler.
You know who else is tall? Me. But I have no business on a professional wrestling television show.
That's a very, very good point, Michael. So Stay the Fuck Off My Professional Wrestling Show Award, Jade Cargill. I keep calling her Jane. Good. Great. Grand. Moving on. I have the honor to announce our match of the year. So we have four nominees for match of the year. We have Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly in their first match. We have Walter versus Dragunov. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah, Ilya Dragunov.
Dragunov. I thought I had that right, but I want to make sure because you're the guy that knows this stuff. Finn Balor versus Timothy Thatcher and Page and Omega versus the Young Bucks. This was a tough one for us. I'll be honest with you, the fair listener, Mike was really, really into the Walter and Dragunov match, which I loved, by the way. It was amazing on NXT UK. But I was really, really into the Kyle O'Reilly and the Finn Balor match. And we were both kind of equally into these matches while both loving the other one. We literally flipped a coin. We were on the phone. We flipped a coin because it was that close, because we love both these matches and both felt very strongly about it. And the coin flip gives us Walter and Dragunov. This was, I think Mike said it best when he texted me after watching this match.
I was texting you while I was watching it at a few points and then like gave a summary at the end.
But I think you said anyone watching this would not believe professional wrestling was fake.
Yeah, I think what I said is you could show this to someone who's never seen pro wrestling, tell them that this is scripted, choreographed, like everything is fake, and they'd be like, fuck no, it's not.
I mean, the brutality of this match, the marks on the chests of these two competitors, it was mostly strikes. It didn't get too cute. It was real. It was a match that would fit in any time period, and it was still fast-paced enough. This would have worked in Madison Square Garden 1974.
Yeah.
But it was still fast-paced enough. It wasn't just that. It was updating it. It was making it better. And it was incredible to watch. It was just what I think professional wrestling... I don't want these people to hurt each other. I want them to work, right? I wanted to work together.
Yeah.
But I believe that they did work together to put on something that looked brutal, that did hurt, but ultimately was safe. And it was a great professional wrestling match that way blew everything off of SmackDown and Raw out of the water. Nothing on WrestleMania or SummerSlam could ever touch a match like that. And if you take that match and Finn and Kyle O'Reilly together, that's what professional wrestling is supposed to look like.
I remember when the Kyle O'Reilly Finn match happened and how much praise you gave to that match, me not having watched it at that point. And when I went back and watched it, like you were dead on about everything. Like the fact that they didn't do silly, stupid stuff on the outside, wasting time. Everything that happened in the ring meant something and told a story of the struggle between two people who were fighting for position. And like that was a masterful match in technical wrestling that I love. I love hold for hold stuff. I like fighting for position, submission work, with good striking mixed in there and just great selling. Both of those guys did that in that match. And I thought that it was such a great match. And then I went and watched Walter and Dragunov. And in the first minute, Walter gave the hardest big boot I feel like I'd ever seen in my life. And that happened probably three more times at a point in the match. The chops, the slaps, the struggles for, like, Dragunov was a mess. He was battered and beaten and would not give up. And, like, I had never seen this guy wrestle in my entire life.
And did not know the storyline behind it.
Yeah. And by like 15 minutes in, I'm like, I want this guy to come back. Like, even though I knew what the result was, I was behind him. I was like,
you bought in.
I know that this guy's the babyface and he is taking a beating. I want him to come back. I want him to come back. And I also love a hard hitting match like this. And that's what this was. I haven't seen, I am not a religious Japanese wrestling watcher. Like I will watch a match here and there. And especially if I'm told that I should watch it, I haven't seen a match like this in a long time. And that's what really stuck out to me and what made me be like, this is my match of the year. And I loved Finn and Kyle O'Reilly, but this was my match of the year by a long ways. This is probably my favorite match that I've seen in a number of years. So well, I'm happy that the coin flip went that way. I'm not, in such a crazy weird year, I'm happy that the top two matches, in my opinion, were these two, because I think that they were both fantastic examples of what I love watching in professional wrestling.
It's what we want. You and I, as pro wrestling fans, have different tastes in some ways. We don't agree on everything, but we agree on this. We want hard hitting. We want technical. We want wrestling. And these are wrestling matches. And so I'm really happy for that too. And I think we should move on to the next award, which is just as serious and just as technical as the previous.
And one of our longest running original awards in history. It is the David Otunga Booker T. Percy Watson Jerry Lawler Worst Commentary Award. And it's named as such because we add the previous year's winner's name into the award. It's a weird Stanley Cup of sorts. And this year, we're branching out and we're making that name even longer by not only adding the award winner, but we're also saying not just commentator, but backstage interviewer, because
yes,
you
got it.
Is
keep
Alex
going.
Marvez.
Go on.
We this guy is just, he's something.
He's a plank of wood.
He's robotic. What?
He's a plank of wood. He has no business being on camera in any way, shape, or form. Yes, Alex Marvez, the worst everything that is everything. And yes, the worst commentator / backstage interviewer / television personality, I guess we can just say, for this award in the future.
The longest award name in the business keeps getting longer.
And every year it'll be added too. So you're welcome, Alex Marvez, David Otunga, Booker T, Percy Watson, and Jerry Lawler, in a long line of greatness. I'm going to move on to the Worst Ring Entrance Award. This was, and I'm going to be honest, a category that was added for one person and one person only. There are no other nominees. It was a runaway smash hit for this person, Shotzi Blackheart. She rides a children's toy tank to the ring. The worst character, the worst entrance, one of the most unwatchable people in the history of the business, Shotzi Blackheart. I don't understand why people like you. They continue to talk about this person as if she's something to behold, but you have the worst ring entrance, not just this year. I'm going to crown it in the history of the business, but the award is only for this year.
which is kind of funny because NXT themselves tonight announced her as their breakout star of the year.
I will go out on a limb. I don't get her. I don't understand why anyone ever wants to see her do anything ever again. She's not good in the ring. She doesn't cut a good promo. She looks ridiculous when she comes to the ring in her stupid tank. It's just children's nonsense.
And
anything else to add?
On,
no. Okay, good.
No.
This is also our award show to air grievances, Mike. Go ahead.
This is our Festivus. We will wrestle each other at the end of the show. Our tag team of the year, this makes me sad because I love tag team wrestling. And in previous years, we have had SCU as our tag team of the year with competition. We've had some great tag teams. Yet this year, we could only muster nominating two teams for tag team of the year. Both from AEW, and it's Omega and Page and FTR. Let's be honest. The NXT tag team title division, it's been weak.
Oh, terrible.
We had at one point Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne were tag team champions with the Broserweights, they were called. And then because of COVID, he couldn't be over here. Thatcher took his spot and turned on Riddle to lose the titles to Imperium. And Imperium was just there.
Imperium's a decent team with no personality or watchability whatsoever.
Yeah.
Which
good
has
workers,
been,
but that's it.
Which has been the tag team division NXT for a long time. I do want to point out that in 2018, we did not award a tag team of the year.
Oh, we did.
Period. We did not even nominate. So, by the way, Mike, you're wrong. This is a good year. We have two to nominate, and I think you should tell us who the winners are.
We're just going to go with FTR because they really are the best tag team in the world when it comes to tag team wrestling. Mm-hmm. And despite a short reign as tag team champions in AEW, a very wrongful short reign, they are still the best at what they do. And no one can hold a candle or whatever match. I don't know what you hold to stuff that's good. The Young Bucks certainly don't hold things to them.
No. Their reign was erratic. I never knew whether they were heels or baby faces. Thank you, Cody Rhodes. But they're just the best tag team in the business. They work like a tag team. They mostly follow the rules, and they're exciting to watch. Unfortunately, they are no longer the tag team champions, and they're not on TV anymore. But hopefully they'll come back. FTR, love you guys. Moving on, we only have three categories left, by the way, for anyone who's counting down. This is a category that was added this year. This is called Too Stupid Even for Pro Wrestling. And there's a lot of nominees this year, guys. I'm going to run these down. We've got the Dinner Debonair, the Stadium Stampede, the Tooth and Nail Match, the Bubbly Bunch, Eye for an Eye Match. We all remember that one. And this is one of the times that we actually mentioned something from main roster WWE stuff. And the most important one, Anything Cinematic from the WWE. And yes, by the way, it includes the Boneyard match, which was awful and unwatchable. Period.
WWE's own match of the year that they announced.
garbage, pure and unadulterated. I'm so, okay. So this is six nominees. We've never had, I mean, we don't have six nominees for anything else this year. And sifting through this garbage, because we've watched, we didn't even watch the Eye for an Eye match. At least I didn't. But I know about it, no. And it was terrible. I didn't watch most of the cinematic matches from WWE because I like myself. We had to narrow it down to something we actually watched and something that was terrible and embarrassing and the kind of thing you would never want your friend that knows you watch wrestling to see you watch. And that came down 100% to the Stadium Stampede. Stupid, embarrassing, idiotic, counterproductive, and really one of the opening salvos into the Inner Circle being a comedy team and not a real heel faction. And I think if you want to give Chris Jericho his third award this night, and all of them bad. Mike, anything to say about this?
Yeah. This was kind of a trade-off from the Blood and Guts match that we were originally supposed to get and then was canceled because of COVID. This was, like you said, the beginning of the end of the Inner Circle that we once knew. You, I believe, were over my house watching this.
Yes.
Or we might have been, no, we might have been on Zoom.
You're right. We were on Zoom. Sorry. Yes, you are correct with that.
And you legitimately were like, I'm done watching this. I'm going to bed.
About halfway through it. Yeah.
Yes. I stayed up and watched the rest of it painfully. And you made the right decision. It is so sad that I saw you just like tap out to being like, not that you needed to go anywhere, needed to be anywhere else. You just decided my time is more important and it would be better spent doing nothing than watching this. Yeah, this was embarrassing. Their suspension of disbelief is one thing. But this was Matt Hardy turned into multiple different people inside of a pool.
Sammy Guevara
was run over by a golf cart again.
It's a bunch of grown men getting together, talking like teenagers about what would be cool to shoot on their home videos. That was what this was. It was embarrassing. It is the worst of professional wrestling. It is the polar opposite of Walter and Dragunov. It's the polar opposite of Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly. And every time it is featured, those kind of things are featured on professional wrestling, it makes the entire product worse. So thank you, Stadium Stampede, for making our 2020 just a little bit worse. Michael, I believe we have two categories left. Male Wrestler of the Year is all up to you.
The penultimate category and award. We have five nominees for this one, and including two members of the main roster in Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns. Drew has won the title at what's that thing called? Mania. He lost it, won it back, and has been a main event guy, the guy on Raw practically all year. We haven't been watching, but that's pretty good. And Roman Reigns, from what I've read, has been a breath of fresh air with his heel character over on SmackDown. That's cool to know. Still not enough to get us to watch it, but feel like that they deserve some recognition in at least being nominated in this. Spoiler alert, they don't win. And we then have Adam Page, Adam Cole, and John Moxley, who are nominated for this. And Adam Cole was the longest reigning NXT champion, lost that title earlier in the year to Keith Lee, was still part of a high profile feud with the Punter, who Kevin is now allowing to have a name, and is just a great worker all around. We know that. Adam Page is a fantastic worker and should be probably the biggest name in AEW, but they've dropped the ball here and there with 100%. His storyline. And John Moxley was champion in AEW for most of the year and had some good feuds with people. And with that, we're going to give John Moxley the Male Wrestler of the Year. He had feuds with Kenny Omega, with Eddie Kingston, with MJF, Jericho. He won the title from him. There were some lesser ones like Brody Lee, and I feel like I'm missing someone in between there. But
he feuded with Hager for a while.
Yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, they had their empty arena match.
Yeah,
at one point, but. Like we have been harsh on some of Moxley's work rate this year, but it doesn't change the fact that the guy can really sell a feud and can really get you invested into his storylines and carried the title well enough. And that's why I think that he deserves to be the Male Wrestler of the Year for us.
I'll be honest, I have not been a big fan of a lot of things that Jon Moxley has done this year. I think he's a great promo who doesn't really deliver very often in the ring, and I think some of the programs have been mediocre. But when Mike was explaining this to me, and he said, we love Jericho and Moxley, I did. I thought MJF and Moxley was a good program. It was a little bit too wordy and too many stupid segments, but it worked. And the Eddie Kingston stuff with Moxley ended up really talking me into the building of a feud I wasn't that interested in. So you put those three feuds up against any other person who had three feuds that good. I don't think anybody. So Jon Moxley deserves this. I'm happy to give that to Jon Moxley for the Male Wrestler of the Year. We are going to move on to our last category of Female Wrestler of the Year. This, unfortunately, does not have the amount of people nominated for it, because if you look at AEW and NXT, there's just not that many people deserving of this award. We have Io Shirai, who is the NXT Women's Champion, who has continuously defended that belt and been on top of the company. We have Rhea Ripley, and we have Serena Deeb. Serena Deeb isn't even really an AEW wrestler. She has the NWA Women's Championship around her waist, but she's been so good in that role and actually a really good professional wrestler that she squeaks onto this list. Io Shirai, long reigning NXT Women's Champion, but unfortunately for me, not all that interesting. And Mike has a little bit of a different view of Io Shirai than I have. We've talked about this over the last couple weeks, but I think we agreed at the end of the day, Rhea Ripley is the best female performer in that company. She should be headlining shows. She should be the NXT Women's Champion or Raw or SmackDown Women's Champion. Her against Raquel Gonzalez is money. It's something I want to see. Her against Mercedes Martinez, it's money. It's something I want to see. The Robert Stone stuff she did earlier on, he's unwatchable and not very good, but I enjoyed watching Rhea Ripley beat him up. Rhea Ripley is a star. She is the brightest shining star of all women in professional wrestling in 2020. And even though she hasn't been booked particularly well, even though she hasn't been a champion, even though we want more from her, she is the Female Wrestler of 2020.
I agree with you. I mean, Io has been booked better than Rhea since WrestleMania when Rhea lost the NXT title to Charlotte. But, I mean, and Rhea has lost to Toni Storm and Dakota Kai recently that just don't seem to make sense to me. She carries herself so well. She puts on great matches. There's no one like her in wrestling. It's incredible that they haven't just said to themselves, "Oh, we really need to get the title back on her as soon as possible." And I'm surprised that they haven't, because I feel like a title feud between her and Raquel is just a wet dream for Vince McMahon to see two big, strong women like fighting for the top of the card in that division.
Have we ever talked about this in the show about Bob Holly back in like 2003? Where the joke is he would go to creative and go, "I got an idea. I get the title and then I just beat everyone. Yeah. Okay. It's a thing that has been talked about in the industry before. And around that time, he actually had a feud with Brock Lesnar, which is very bizarre because he was actually put in like a main event kind of feud. And Bob Holly looked like a million bucks. I mean, he was in incredible shape. He was a great worker, but obviously had been treated like a jobber for so long that it was kind of ridiculous him being in that spot. So when I look at Rhea Ripley, I think about that Bob Holly quote. Rhea Ripley should just get the title and just fucking beat everyone for 2 years. Just beat everyone. That's what you... Rhea Ripley she has Hulk Hogan-like qualities. She can be the face of the company. She's that goddamn good. She can sell. She's bigger than most of her opponents, and she can believably sell to them. That's Hogan. I mean, Hogan always yeah. fought monsters, but even when he fought people like Mr. Perfect or Rick Rude or someone like that, he could sell for them and make himself look in danger. Rhea is that fucking good, and they're just squandering every opportunity with her being a mid-card babyface in the NXT division or the NXT world brand, whatever you want to say. So Rhea, female wrestler of the year, you haven't been booked that way, but you goddamn deserve it because you're that goddamn good. Yeah. And that brings an end to our awards, Mike.
Yeah, we got there.
Not a single wrestler showed up again to get their award. Actually, you know what? Chris Jericho is here. He's knocking on my door. I'm not going to answer it because I don't want any lame comedy, but I will mail, Chris, I'll mail you all three of your awards for the Inner Circle. Gotcha.
There's been some issues with the USPS this year, so some invitations might have gotten lost in the mail.
Chris just said through the door, "I do not believe in the United States Postal Service because I'm a Trump weirdo and don't believe in the government." But I don't know.
He's also from Winnipeg, you idiot.
That's what he said. That's what he said.
On that bombshell, we got New Year's Evil next week. I think that's what we're going to be watching, as opposed to Snoop Dogg on AEW.
That should be a big show too. But no, it's NXT's turn.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Finn versus Kyle O'Reilly too.
Goddamn right.
That wins it out in my book. But anything else that you want to add before we sign off here for the year?
No, we're going to come back next year with the breakdown of our predictions from the year before, make some predictions for 2021. Lord knows all of our predictions for 2020 came true because we knew there'd be a virus. We knew that we would be socially distant for the entire year, and we knew Roman Reigns would turn heel. So we knew all that, and you'll see the results of it next week on the Miss Boss podcast.
Well, with all of that in mind, thank you everyone for joining us. Award winners, expect your awards in the mail to an address that we definitely know in the coming days. And for everyone else out there, have a happy new year. Hope that you had a nice Christmas, and we'll see you next week. Good night. Good wrestling.